I'm Paul Vanthus, and this is Curiosity Never Retires, a podcast from OLLI at American University. Curiosity Never Retires is a peek, a preview, of one of the many courses on many subjects that OLLI at American University is offering this fall. Today, that topic is the literature of Thomas Hardy, the author of some of the best-known and most admired novels of the 19th century, including Far From the Madding Crowd, Tess of the D'Urbervilles, and The Mayor of Casterbridge. Hardy was one of the best-known of the Victorian Age novelists, but he's not much read today. To tell us about Hardy and the study group she's leading about him is Linda Freeman. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today. I'm glad you're interested in Thomas Hardy. I am too. The reason I wanted to teach him is partly because he isn't read much, and I think it's time people should find him again. He has lots to say to us about some important issues of our own time, issues of identity, of dealing with change, of moral integrity, ever heard of that, and complex sexual politics. All of this is in the novels, and we could learn from this, I think, these days.
Which of his works will you look at?
The Mayor of Casterbridge is one of the works we will talk about, and the other is Far From the Madding Crowd.
Well, many of his novels are long and complex stories spanning years or sometimes even decades of their characters' lives. That seems to me, at least, and disagree with me if you do, unlike much of modern fiction. What do you hope your students will take away from the course?
I hope they will take away some pleasure from reading the works of Thomas Hardy. I hope they will also learn a technique of reading big books. Many of the members of the study group had very busy work lives, and when they come to retirement, they want to do some recreational reading. And because they haven't been doing this all along, they are a little afraid of some of the big novels like Moby Dick or Middlemarch. And I hope to give them some techniques to work with and how to analyze these long literary novels and concepts to equip them so that they can bring up subjects like pathetic fallacy at cocktail parties. It's a great conversational gamut. And the other thing is, if they can read a novel by Thomas Hardy, they can read other novels by Thomas Hardy. And it is a transferable skill to the rest of the 19th century.
What have you thought of those film versions, and how well do they relate to the novels?
Well, that's a really good question, and everybody wants to have some commentary on the films, usually. I do not use the films in the class or have the students looking at them during the course, but I try to set them up so that they can view their own the movies and have some way to deal with it. I have the two Freeman's laws that I like to talk about movies with. Freeman's first law is read the book first. And the reason for that is the visual images of a movie will be in your head. You cannot get rid of them. And you really should let the author try to create the story and the imagery in your head without having it coming from a movie director. So read the book first. The second law is do not judge the movie on the basis of how faithful it is to the book. A movie is a movie. It is another art form. It should not be just a factual rendering of the novel. It should have its own integrity and its own artistic form, and it should be judged on whether it's a good movie, not on how close it is to the novel.
Did you have any adaptations that you liked particularly that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, well, there are pretty good ones out there. Far From the Madding Crowd. First of all, by the way, madding is not maddening, it's madding. That means frenzied as opposed to being angry. It is the title of this novel is from Gray's Elegy in a Country Churchyard, and it's his term, madding. It's really meaning of getting away from the turmoil of the city and being in the country. And almost all of Hardy's works are set in the countryside. Yeah, what he calls Wessex, which is not a real place anymore. It was, I guess, part of West Saxony, but it is Dorset, and largely Dorset. And some of the novels overlap with characters in the same characters in different books. At any rate, about the films, Madding Crowd, there was a silent movie made in 1915. There was a very famous one made in 1967 with Alan Bates in it and Julie Christie. I would recommend that one as the best version of this book, but your mileage may differ, and you have your own opinion too. There is another one that was on television in Britain, but I think the 1967 one is probably the best. There was a more recent one in 2015, and that was with Carey Mulligan.
Your expertise extends beyond Hardy to other writers of the period. Why did you study Victorian literature?
The whole Victorian period interests me because there's so many similarities to our own day. I mean, in the 19th century, Britain was the richest country in the world. It was also the most powerful country. We have been the richest country in the world and the most powerful country in this past century. And in both cases, pockets of poverty that were really bad and needed much attention. And in the 19th century, Britain was in a variety of small scale wars. And we've had a series of those for a long time now in this country. So there's some things in common with the 19th century in Britain. Our own history in the 19th century was so focused on the Civil War that it's not quite the same comparison. But so we can learn from the 19th century in Britain. The other thing about the 19th century in Britain is this is when you really begin first hearing the great women writers. You hear their voices. They're very strong. And we're talking about Jane Austen and the Brontes, all three of them, and Elizabeth Gaskell and George Eliot and Elizabeth Barrett Browning and so on.
Mm. So Hardy's novels came out of an era when novels were more than a diversion. This is pre-psychotherapy, pre-psychology. They were often the way readers explored the larger questions about life. What do you think studying literature and the humanities in general can do for readers? Do you think they can still serve these kinds of purposes?
I think they serve new purposes, and I think they're very important purposes, and I think they need to be developed more and paid attention to. The reading fiction is a way to develop the imagination of the reader. And when the imagination of the reader is developed enough so that he can put or she can put herself in somebody else's shoes because they've had experience doing it with fiction, this develops empathy, the ability to have empathy with other people. Imagination can help develop empathy, and literature helps develop empathy. And this is what is in very short supply these days.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that the studying the humanities in general has the same sort of
absolutely
value and effect?
Yeah, I do. And I think also that there's some interesting new work out there that reading fiction is good for all of us. And the reason it is good for all of us, it's a way of avoiding memory loss or dementia in some form or other. And the reason is it requires the same skills you have with interacting with real people, because you meet a guy on page 3 in your novel and he shows up again on page 37. And you're supposed to remember some things about this guy. It's like meeting somebody at a party and you have to kind of remember what it was. And it requires those kinds of skills, which keeps the mind active and involved and not damaged.
Linda, you talked about the value of reading fiction and what fiction will teach you. A lot of people these days tend to either shy away from fiction or really focus on nonfiction. Why is reading fiction provide things that reading nonfiction doesn't? And what kind of reactions do you get from different people?
Okay, well, let's take the first part of that question first. What happens when you read nonfiction? In many cases, or most cases, nonfiction is easier to read. You do not have to remember about the guy on page 3 than on page 37. It comes in chunks, and you read what is of interest to you, and you leave the rest and don't have to worry about remembering it from section to section. You only read one section. If you find somebody is tending to read only nonfiction, it's quite possible that that person is dealing with memory loss at that point, because fiction is too hard for that person to read. And it's not exactly a diagnostic tool, but it might be an indicator of something that needs following up on. So I know that there are a lot of folks out there that feel that fiction is not true, and that nonfiction is a better thing to read. And I think that that is not a good way to think about it. And fiction keeps the interpersonal skills alive, and that is what keeps us sane.
Mm-hmm. Now, and the different reactions from different people?
Yeah, well, some of my favorite study group members are lawyers. A lot of people say, oh my God, Washington has so many lawyers, and let's kill all the lawyers, which is a misreading of the Shakespeare line. And I love the lawyers. And let me tell you why. Lawyers know how to read a text. They know that words count. They know that the words mean something and they're there for a purpose, and they take it seriously. And furthermore, most lawyers are pretty verbal. So they're good in discussion and they know how to interact with each other. They know how to compromise. They know how to come to a conclusion. They're a delight. I do not want to kill all the lawyers. medical doctors, on the other hand, in many cases, are used to being heard. What they say is what is like the voice of God. And it has to be. That's the way work is done. When they're reading fiction, they don't negotiate much. And they will take a position and hang in there with it. One of the reasons I like having physicians in the class is because in some ways, there are illnesses in the 19th century that people die of, and we don't know what it would be called today, what the disease was that takes them out. What's wrong with Tiny Tim, for example? This is a classic one, and doctors can have different opinions. But I love all the members of my class, but I particularly am fond of the lawyers.
Linda, thanks for taking the time to talk about your course, and good luck with it. I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to take it.
Well, thank you.
Curiosity Never Retires is produced by myself, David Flaxman, Andrew Hiller, and Jesse Williams. It's presented by Ollie at American University. Our theme is background music for video by Pixabay. We hope you'll look for more of our podcasts about Ollie's fall offerings. For Curiosity Never Retires, I'm Paul Vanvis. Take care.